Lawrence, Kansas is certainly known as an educated town, a writer's place. Famously, it's where beat poet William S. Burroughs lived out his final years. But it was also home to another of America's greatest writers. Langston Hughes spent many of his formative years living in Lawrence, and you can still find remnants of his life there today. We have two guests joining us now to dive into this history. Denise Lowe is a Lawrence-based writer and poet and the author of Langston Hughes in Lawrence. Thanks so much for coming on, Denise.
Hey, you're very welcome. I'm always happy to be here and celebrate Langston Hughes.
And Sean Lee Alexander is an associate professor of African and African American Studies and the director of the Langston Hughes Center at the University of Kansas. Sean, thank you as well.
Thank you very much.
So let's start here with the basics. Langston Hughes is best known as a leader of the Harlem Renaissance of the 1920s. He's an African-American poet and writer. He's enormously influential. But what is his connection to Lawrence? Denise, can you kind of walk us through the early years of Hughes's life?
Sure. Nothing like doing 15 years in 2 minutes here. But
pressure's on.
His family had been in Lawrence for about 50 years. They were abolitionists who had settled there after the Civil War. And because of that depth, Langston Hughes really had the advantage of a very well-known, prominent family. And his mother had grown up in Lawrence. So even though he was born in Joplin, and we acknowledge he's Missourian, but he also moved to his grandmother's household in Lawrence on Alabama Street within months. He had wonderful experiences and also some discriminatory experiences, but he did get a good education in the partially integrated schools. He had a good church experience, and he had a lot of vaudeville and other films and shows that were in downtown Lawrence.
And so then he moved away in his middle school years. Is that about right?
That's right. Junior high, his grandmother died, and the household broke up, and he moved off with his mother.
And we're talking 1913 or so?
That's right. That's right.
So his formative years, though, and you can kind of trace through some of the themes of his life, as you kind of started to mention, about his church life, about his partially integrated life, about some of the discriminatory experiences, roots in Lawrence, really.
That's right.
Sean, when we say Langston Hughes is influential, what do we mean? You know, who did he influence and how?
Well, Langston Hughes has influenced so many people, and I think on not just American literature, but also worldwide literature. He's a poet, he's a critic, he's a novelist, he writes short stories, plays. He's touched everything in entertainment, in literature. And by doing that, he's had great influence on countless people. And I think that's one of the things that's often forgotten about Langston Hughes. When we talk about Langston Hughes, we talk about Langston Hughes as a poet only. And that's far too giving him short shrift. He was internationally connected. He was politically connected. And he continued to push for those ideals that he believed in America. And wanted America to be constantly throughout his life and continue to push the country.
And so what are some of the classic Langston Hughes works that we should all maybe be familiar with?
You're asking me?
Yeah, Professor Alexander, sorry.
Sure. Well, we could go with the normal ones, right? We could go with I, Too. We could go with The Negro Speaks of Rivers. We can go with if we're going to talk about Lawrence, we need to know his Not Without Laughter, his first novel, which is based on somewhat semi-autobiographical about Lawrence. I think the Dream Montage is something that we should know as well.
So you mentioned Not Without Laughter. So that was published in 1930. It's a novel, but as you said, there are kind of autobiographical elements to it. So it tells the story of, I believe, Sandy Rogers, a young boy growing up in the fictional town of Stanton, Kansas, during the early part of the 20th century. So it's not hard to kind of draw the line from that character to Hughes's life. So can you talk a little bit about that and what elements kind of made it into that semi-fictional version of his life?
Yeah, I think, I mean, he tells the story of Sandy Rogers, who's a young boy that's growing up in Stanton, Kansas, right, during the early part of the 20th century. And again, looking at Hughes's life, that fits perfectly into what we know about him and Lawrence. You know, he lives with his mother, who's Angie, and his grandmother, who's called Aunt Hager. Angie works as a cook and a housekeeper for a wealthy white family. And Aunt Hager takes in the laundry, right? Sandy's father, Jimbo, comes and goes and travels around looking for work. He leaves Stanton. We trace this, you know, through the stories of what he's doing. And he admits, you know, Hughes admits that he based Stanton on many of the things that he sees in his life in Lawrence. But there are differences, right, that he has between his life in Sandy's. And he talks about this in other works that he wanted to do. And I think one of the main things is he tells you in The Big C that he wanted, you know, he wanted to write about a typical Negro family in the Midwest, about people who, that like those who had known, he had known in Kansas. But he says that he was not a typical family. His grandmother never took washing in or worked in service. Or went to church that often. So he tries to bring in that different aspect that he sees, but maybe wasn't in his own life. And he also talks about that being tough on him, right? That because his grandmother was proud and wouldn't do domestic work and things like that, she also often struggled to pay the bills and he had to supplement it and things like that.
Right, right. Well, Denise, I see that you have a passage there. Were you looking to add something to this part of his life?
Yes. I think one of the exciting things for us in this region is the documented evidence of the influence. For example, in Kansas City, when he came back to visit in 1939, the Star wrote an article about him. And he said that he was influenced by Kansas City for his first book of poetry, The Weary Blues. And he wrote, "This Kansas City was the biggest city in the world for me. One day, down on Independence Boulevard, I heard a blind man singing. I got the weary blues, can't be satisfied. The song stuck, and years later, I wrote a poem called Weary Blues." And that was the centerpiece of his first book of poetry.
The centerpiece of his first book, and its title and the poem came from Kansas City here.
Absolutely.
So, Denise, you've said that much of the Lawrence that Hughes knew when he lived here, it still exists today. So, you know, what might Langston Hughes recognize if he were to come back to Lawrence today?
Well, he lived just a few doors down the street on New York Street, where St. Luke's AME Church has been undergoing a renovation. And I celebrate the Lawrence Preservation Society for helping to make it one of the most intact downtowns in the region. His grandfather's grocery store on Massachusetts Street at 820 Massachusetts Street is still there. The bottom level of his junior high school at 8th and Kentucky, and the Carnegie Library is there.
So still, Lawrence at that time, I don't have a great feel for what exactly it looked like. I mean, certainly it was smaller, and
yes,
certainly, you know, you wouldn't have the number of cars and trucks and things running through there, but still elements of it similar.
Very, very much so. One of the differences is there were so many more railroad lines going through town. And Lawrence really was a crossroads. It was on of African-American vaudeville circuit. It was on the mainstream vaudeville circuit. So he, even though people assume that in Harlem is where he first saw shows, in fact, he had grown up with a wide variety of entertainment.
So you're starting to get into that there. I'm curious about how Lawrence kind of affected Langston Hughes and his life, how it influenced him. You talked about how it's at the crossroads of train lines, and there are lots of characters. It's a vaudeville circuit, those kinds of things. But what else do we know, Denise Lowe, about how Lawrence shaped Langston Hughes for the rest of his life?
If you read The Big C, his autobiography, the grinding poverty and the economic hardship is probably the most underlying discriminatory piece that's going on. His grandmother rented rooms. She would not work as a domestic, very proud woman. She had first been married to Richard Sheridan, who rode with John Brown and was killed at Harper's Ferry, and was recognized. She was a minor celebrity and was recognized for that. So that was part of it. Also, the discrimination. And I think there was definitely bitterness that he writes about that comes from some of his experiences at the movie theater, where one movie theater quits allowing African-Americans, another one put them in the balcony, that kind of thing.
Sean Lee Alexander, do you have anything to add in that respect? You know, where can we see Hughes's Lawrence roots in his work?
Well, I would like to add on what Denise said, ended with there, on the discrimination and the ideas of race that existed in Kansas and in Lawrence. I think that's one of the things that we often forget when we talk about Kansas, because we like to talk about Kansas as being the free state, the home of John Brown, right, or the land of John Brown. And then we always like to talk about that we also have Brown v. Board. But the only reason Brown v. Board exists in the in Kansas, of course, is because segregation was here.
Sure.
And I think that's an important thing to remember, that Hughes is growing up, you know, he's born in 1902. There's a lynching in Leavenworth, Kansas, a brutal lynching in Leavenworth, Kansas, in 1901, the year before. There's racial violence in the state. And Hughes is growing up around that, and that's going to affect him. That, you know, segregation also begins in Kansas. If you want to look at the cases of the what we call the civil rights cases of 1883, the first case in that, Stanley versus the United States, is out of Hiawatha, Kansas, and that's the case where the Supreme Court rules that segregation is okay, and they overturn the 1875 Civil Rights Act. So we have, you know, Kansas being at the bookends, the front helping create segregation and then helping dismantle segregation with Brown v. Board. But all of that type of stuff is going to come into play and going to affect Hughes and his life. And I think while everything is going on, you know, he talks about, as Denise brought up, the segregation in schools. You know, it's not openly segregated once he gets in, I believe it's fourth grade, if I'm correct.
Right.
Denise, you can correct
right.
me on that. That it's not completely segregated, but he's still segregated in, you know, oftentimes in the classroom. There's the famous story of putting down the Jim Crow row, right, where he talks about being the African Americans all being separated in the classroom and getting in trouble for that. Those things are going to have a lasting impact on him, and I think that he's going to come back and constantly think about that, and it's going to affect his writing, his blues sensibility that he brings out in his poetry, which is unique to Hughes.
I think underlying almost everything he wrote was his activism.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the roots of that activism, as you both have detailed, comes from some of the segregation and all of that in Lawrence.
And also his family tradition.
Kansas City, what is your favorite Langston Hughes poem? Is there a piece of writing by Langston Hughes that stuck with you? Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, more on Langston Hughes and his Missouri and Kansas roots. Central Standard returns in just a moment. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jeremy Bernfeld. We're talking about Langston Hughes, one of America's most influential writers. Our guests are Denise Lowe, author of Langston Hughes in Lawrence, and Sean Lee Alexander, the director of the Langston Hughes Center at the University of Kansas. We left off talking about Lawrence and its impact, but did Langston Hughes talk much about Lawrence? You know, did he acknowledge it as part of his history, Denise? Did he write about it? We've talked a little bit about some of his semi-autobiographical novel work. We've talked a little bit about some of his actual autobiography, The Big C. But how much did he write about Lawrence, and how much of a part did it play in those kinds of things?
You know, I would say that he went on. He had a career. He had a larger vision of the Black is Beautiful. That term comes from one of his poems. On occasion, when he introduced himself, he would say, "I am from the center of the continent, and therefore I am very American." And so I think he identified with the land and the place. But he also had other larger concerns.
Sure. Well, you know, I think before we move on, we'd be remiss if we weren't able to perhaps play some of Langston Hughes's poetry. So let's hear that Langston Hughes poem I referenced at the beginning of the show. It's called The Negro Speaks of Rivers. So here's Langston Hughes reading that poem.
I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo, and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers.
And as we know, the Lawrence is situated on the mouth of a river or at the banks of the Kaw River. As I said at the top, he wrote that poem in 1920 after he'd moved from Lawrence. But is there any thought that perhaps Lawrence influenced that one of his most famous poems, Denise Law?
Well, certainly he's lived on riverbanks. Like I say, New York Street was just blocks from the river, Alabama Street a half mile. And certainly the atmosphere is just thick with humidity from the river. Also listening to that, I was just struck with how it was lovely to hear that warm Midwestern accent.
In Langston Hughes.
Yeah.
Professor Alexander, we talked a little bit about this, but Hughes grew up, as you said, in a deeply segregated time across the country, and certainly living in Kansas, he was not exempt from that. You know, African Americans endured unspeakable injustice all over the country. Do we know much about what Lawrence was like when Hughes was here? You talked about how fourth grade, perhaps, it wasn't officially segregated schools, but certainly segregation existed. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and Denise already talked about it to some degree, right? We have Lawrence is a segregated but not segregated city, right? It's, you know, it is a place that segregation exists in very much in the tradition, even if it's not by the laws. You have segregated movie theaters, as Denise said, or you've got places where they could African Americans will only be in the balconies. You've got them being segregated in the schools, or if once he gets into a non-segregated school, their African Americans are often separated within the classroom, and set out that way. So it's very much a lifestyle that he's going to see, and the community itself is segregated to some degree, right? The residential areas, and you can still see that somewhat today, I think. Going back to some of what Denise said about what maybe he may still recognize. He may still recognize some of the racial and class segregation of the city of Lawrence today.
Hmm. I think one of the most difficult aspects of this kind of segregation is the uncertainty. Because, you know, one day it's this way. One day you show up at your movie house and they say, oh, no more. This line is constantly moving and shifting.
Very confusing.
Yeah, I mean, very much. It's an invisible line in many ways, right? That it's a constant shifting invisible line. That one day, you know, you may walk down the street and someone doesn't get upset with you because you didn't step off the sidewalk, and then the next day, someone does get upset with you, and it could mean your life.
I'm excited about the movie coming about out about Wilt Chamberlain that Kevin Willmott's doing, and it will go into more depth about some of the racial barriers that Wilt Chamberlain helped to bring down in the 50s.
Right, so years after Langston Hughes' experience in Lawrence, but certainly a lot of that still being felt. Kansas City, as I said, we want to hear about your favorite Langston Hughes poem. Is there a piece of writing by Langston Hughes maybe that stuck with you? Call us and tell us about it at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can post your comments to Facebook or on Twitter. Our handle here is KCURCST. We've talked a little bit here so far about the autobiography, The Big C. One of the passages most often cited has to do with his upbringing in Lawrence. And so I'll read a part of that here. He wrote, I was unhappy for a long time and very lonesome living with my grandmother. Then it was that books began to happen to me. and I began to believe in nothing but books and the wonderful world in books, where if people suffered, they suffered in beautiful language, not in monosyllables as we did in Kansas. Not exactly a flattering picture of his life in Lawrence. But it's really something to think that one of the greatest American writers discovered writing and he discovered books in Lawrence. Isn't that right, Professor Alexander?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, and I would give that also back to his grandmother, even though he's saying, you know, it was not always that comfortable for him. I would say the pride in the race comes from his grandmother as well. He would, when he talked about Du Bois on the death of W.E. Du Bois in 1963, he made a very simple statement and said that the two things I knew in my life, at the earliest remembrance of my life, was the Bible and the Crisis magazine that my grandmother would read to me when I was sitting on her lap, right? And I think that instilled very much in him that pride and in the word, if you will.
In that passage, he says he was unhappy in Lawrence. Denise, I mean, we talked about some of the segregation, but is there any idea why that was, maybe on a more personal level?
Well, I might go on and expand into one of my theories about Midwestern endurance and taciturnness and the monosyllables. And, you know, President Obama, whose grandparents are Kansans, I like to observe in him that absolutely you could high threshold of pain. You just deal with stuff and keep going. And that survivorship is something that I think that passage celebrates.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Well, we have a caller, Ramon from Overland Park. Hi, Ramon.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Great. Did you have a favorite Langston Hughes work?
Yes. I don't know exactly if this is the correct title, but I believe it's A Dream Deferred.
Sure.
It goes, what happened to a dream deferred or sequestered like a raisin in the sun?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, we have a clip there. So, Ramon, let me pause you right there. Let's hear some of that. And what we have here is Langston Hughes still part of our contemporary culture. This clip here is actually a Nike ad, and it features Danny Glover reciting that Langston Hughes poem. I believe it's actually called Harlem. And the screen shows sprinter Sonia Richards Ross training for the Olympics. So you'll hear that here. But here's that poem that Ramon is referencing.
This has been a disappointing 2007 season for Sonia Richards. She will not qualify for the illness for much of 2007.
What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? Or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat or crust and sugar over like a silky sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load. Or does it explode?
So you can get an idea about the impact of that poem. Certainly there was some music added, and it's a Nike ad, and it was about the Olympics and all of that. But still, obviously very powerful. So, Ramon, thanks for bringing that to our attention. Was there something that spoke to you about that poem? And you mentioned that it kind of stuck with you.
Well, it was my freshman year in college, and it just stuck with me for the rest of my life because it kind of, when you analyze it, basically, we all have dreams, and we don't even know what happened to it.
Right. It kind of speaks to that disenchantment that can happen as we grow older, but also keeping those dreams alive and perhaps pursuing them as well, it seems like. Well, Ramon, thank you so much for the call. And I want to ask you, Professor Alexander, that is one of Langston Hughes' most famous works. What can you tell us about it as a professor who's dived into some of this and Langston Hughes' work?
Well, I think it goes back to, again, something that Denise said, that I think activism is at the key of a lot of his work. And I think that he's trying to talk about the racial situation in America and what do we do? And I think it also speaks, again, towards the universality of his poetry, right? That someone can read that poem and get so many different things out of it, of what they want. As Ramon said, that it's the, you know, this, you know, we all can have these dreams and we don't know what maybe happens to them. But Hughes is saying that, you know, we've got these black Americans that we're telling to do certain things, and then we're not, and they're being told to dream as well, right? And they're told to be dreaming and dreaming and dreaming. And what are we going to do? And then we crush those dreams with the type of system that we have in the country. And so what happens to those dreams? Do they fester, right? Do they explode? What occurs with them? And what are we going to do with them? And I think that's something he's always constantly pushing us to understand, you know, what are we doing to, and I think that's a thing that many people that talk about race in America are trying to do, many of Hughes's contemporaries as well, questioning what are we doing to America at the center of it, when we're constantly having these things and we're pushing back and not letting things develop the way they should be because we're putting artificial restrictions on it.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Jeremy Bernfeld. Our guests are Denise Lowe and Sean Lee Alexander, and we're talking about Langston Hughes, his upbringing in Lawrence. You can join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Well, we have another caller who called that number. Joe from Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Joe.
Good morning. I'd just like to inform everybody that in the museum section of the Black Archives of Mid-America, when you walk in, I think you will see a couple lines from one of Langston's poems, and it's called "I Was Blind and Now I See." And that's very important in that you get a chance to take a look at museum pieces that, you know, record and exhibit African-American history in this region.
Right. And as we talked about, I mean, we saw in that Nike ad, Langston Hughes is still very much a part of kind of contemporary culture, whether it's looking back in historical archives and learning about it in school or using some of his work, like I said, in ads and in textbooks and all of those kinds of things. So, Joe, did you have a favorite poem from Langston Hughes, or does Langston Hughes still kind of apply and speak to you today?
Well, I tell you what, my fraternity's national convention in New Orleans, and at that time they were having a, a city fair, like the St. Louis Fair or
whatever
it was, but it was the New Orleans Exposition, and they had this great poem up there. I did not know that much about Langston, but I was just fascinated with I Am Rivers. So that's one of my favorites.
Great. Well, Joe, thank you so much for joining us today. We have another caller here, Dean from Liberty. Hi, Dean.
Good morning. I wanted to mention a poem that undoubtedly is related to Lawrence and to his mother's activities or employment there, a poem called Mother to Son, in which she explains the difficulties that she had as the mother does, in raising the child. Another one which might connect to Lawrence is Mulatto, which was published in 1927. Those two, I thought I would just enter into the conversation and let your experts go with that. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Dean. I appreciate it. Denise, you were reacting to that call there from Dean.
Well, I want to jump in and plug the book, My Dear Boy, a collection of letters from Carrie, the mother, not the grandmother, the mother, Carrie Langston. Her correspondence between her and Langston Hughes just published. Carmeleta Williams, John Edgar Tidwell are the editors, and it's really a wonderful book.
And Professor Alexander, do we know much about those poems, Mother and Son and Mulatto, that Dean mentioned?
I know them, but I don't know if they're connected to Lawrence. Denise would know that more than I do. But,
Sure. Well, I'm sure it's hard to draw an exact straight line, but certainly we've been talking about Lawrence's effect in his family.
Let me jump in and say that when Charles Langston moved to River Lakeview, 5 miles from Lawrence, and had a 120-acre farm, first census, he was recorded as white. The second census, he was recorded as mulatto. And the third census, he was recorded as colored.
And this is Langston Hughes' grandfather, is that correct?
Yes. So, I mean, that's how convoluted and odd all of the racial terminology was.
That's a fascinating kind of picture, as you mentioned, of racial attitudes in Kansas and in the country in that era.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about one of Langston Hughes' famous poems. So let's play that clip. Here's Langston Hughes, the poet himself, reading his poem, I Too Sing America.
I too sing America. I am the darker brother. They send me to eat in the kitchen when company comes, but I laugh and eat well and grow strong. Tomorrow, I'll be at the table when company comes. Nobody'll dare say to me, eat in the kitchen then. Besides, they'll see how beautiful we are and be ashamed. I too am America.
And that's another one of Langston Hughes' most famous poems. As far as his life, did he ever come back to Lawrence after he moved away, Denise? I know that he did have a connection with KU, but did he travel back?
Yes, he did. And he saw his junior high teacher. He was really at his teacher from Pinckney. He came back and visited relatives, Auntie Reed, and so forth. He also established a relationship with the library, and they started to collect his works. And he was very generous at donating work to him.
And that's the KU library?
Yes, special collections.
And so is that something that you can go? I imagine that you've seen some of that, and you can go and check that out at the KU library there?
Kenneth Spencer's special research collections and research library.
And Professor Alexander, have you dove into any of that research and his connection to KU, some of the papers there, that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's a nice collection there. Deborah Dandridge, who's in charge of the Kansas collection, African-American Experience collection there, has done a great job over the years, continue to add to that collection. And on the Langston Hughes Center website, we have links to all of that information that you can go to and see that under Library Resources. And you can get direct links to the material that they have. They also have, was it 1957, I believe, Denise, that he came back and gave a lecture at KU?
Yes.
It's 57, 56, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And they have the recording of that lecture as well.
And he was also back in about 65, I believe.
Okay, yeah.
In the late 50s and mid-60s. Well, I want to get to another caller before we run out of time. Not too much time, but I believe it's Arlander from KCMO.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. Did you have a favorite Langston Hughes work?
Yes, it's Black Like Me. I was a young man, almost 14 years old, and my parents were in the service, and they were both from Kansas, and where there was no real negative about being Black, but there was no pride either. And I ran across this poem on a poster, and I posted it in my room, and it was my mantra for being happy with who I was. So it was important to me. My first call ever to share this kind of thing with anybody.
Well, that's a really powerful statement, that it kind of gave you hope and it gave you kind of a direction.
Yes.
From this work of poetry.
It honestly did. And when I heard that you were on, I just had to call in. In fact, I felt it was my duty to call in because it was so important to myself, view of myself and how I felt about what my limits were and were not, especially.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing that beautiful thought with us. I appreciate that. Professor Alexander, is that something, surely when we look back at Langston Hughes' work, we can look at his effect on kind of African-American culture after his death and how it runs up into today. I would imagine that kind of feeling is commonplace among Langston Hughes' work.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's 100% correct. And I think the other thing is that that whole sense of identity was a constant theme that he has throughout his work from the early years all the way to the end. One of my favorite pieces by him is Brothers from 1924, where he says, "Kinsmen, you and I, you from Africa, I from the USA, brothers, you and I." Right. So he's again internationalizing that experience of identity in who I am. And mulatto, I mean, all of those things, he's trying to get down to the identity and tell people to be proud of who you are.
Right. Well, we just have 1 minute left, so I want to ask each of you, there's so much to dig in here with Langston Hughes. If you had to recommend a book, either a poetry or a book about Langston Hughes or any of these things, where would you go? So, Denise, let's start with you. Where can we find out more?
Well, right now I would say go to the Langston Hughes website. But to learn about the connection to the Lawrence area, I'd say the Big C.
Sure, sure. And you, Professor Alexander?
The Big C is one of my favorites as well. I like Not Without Laughter quite a bit as well. I would say those. And just grab the collection of poetry. There's multiple collections, but the big collection that Ramerson put together a number of years ago.
And that's his biographer. Do you happen to know the title of that, or Denise, can you come up
probably
with...
Probably just collected poems of Langston Hughes, I would assume.
Collected poems of Langston Hughes. Well, we will round up those links absolutely to all of those resources there on our website on the Central Standard page at kcur.org. And I really want to thank both of our guests for being here to talk about Langston Hughes and his connection to Lawrence. But unfortunately, we are out of time. So I want to thank our guests, as I said, Denise Lowe, Lawrence-based writer and poet and the author of Langston Hughes in Lawrence, and Sean Lee Alexander, professor of African and African-American studies at the University of Kansas. Denise, thank you so much for being here.
You bet.
Professor Alexander, thank you as well.
Thank you very much for having us.
Tune in tomorrow for Central Standard when we talk about Google Fiber's progress in our area, in addition to Google Glass. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Kate Baxendale. Up to Date is next with a discussion about Mizzou football's Michael Sam and what his coming out story means for the future of collegiate athletics. I'm Jeremy Bernfeld, and this is Central Standard on KCUR.